Hello, friends. Welcome inside the Riverland Roofing Studios. I'm Ben Garrett at Spirit Ben on Twitter. No, I am not live from Tampa. For those that follow along every single day, y'all know that this week I'm the man in the chair. I drew the short straw. Brad Logan arrived in Tampa today for SEC Media Days. Jake Thompson from the Ole Miss Spirit, my coworker at the Ole Miss Spirit, just like Brad and Zach Berry, he arrived on Sunday. Zach gets there on Wednesday. We'll be live on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Time for Talk of Champions. So make sure to check that out. 1 p.m. Central Time, live for Ole Miss's time and day at SEC Media Days. Hear from Pete Golding, Kewan Lacy, Trinidad Chambliss, William Eccles, and Brad is live on the scene. Today you're going to hear from Matt Moscona, Ross Dellinger, Brooks Austin, Mike Griffith of the AJC. But tomorrow, you're going to also hear from Pete Golding and, like I said, the players and any other Ole Miss and SEC personalities that Brad comes up with off the street. But we'll be live at 1 p.m. Central Time. I think Pete Golding's supposed to take the stage at 1:30. So maybe we'll watch along with you. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but I do know who's going to be to start. It's me and Sudu. So for all you've been wondering, where our man Sudu's been, he's been doing great stuff for Game Runs Deep and trying to broaden it outside of being just an Ole Miss show, and he's done a great job. So make sure to search for Game Runs Deep wherever you get your podcast. I'll be on as the Ole Miss guy more and more. He and I talk almost every day. I love him to death, and he will be the person with me in the chair since I drew that short straw to stay back while all my friends get to go have fun in Tampa. You know, Jake was talking to Gunnar Stockton today about Trinidad Chambliss, a great story on the Ole Miss Spirit, OleMissSpirit.com, affiliate of On3. Sign up today for $1. Or Drew Bobo from Georgia about William Eccles. The Ole Miss angles from SEC Media Days with different voices. Jake is covering it all at the Ole Miss Spirit. Sign up today for $1. So many of you come up to me and Brad on the street and say, hey, man, we love what y'all do. How can we help you? Sign up at the Ole Miss Spirit, OMSpirit.com, and fit it on through $1 for 5 days. And if you don't like it, cancel. Or if you do like it, it'll switch over to an annual sub and you'll be with us for a year, if not longer. We hope forever, because the Ole Miss Spirit, in our opinion, is the best place to hang out and talk all things Ole Miss all the time. Please join us at the Ole Miss Spirit, OleMissSpirit.com, affiliate of On3, where you can read Jake's stuff from Drew Bobo, from Gunnar Stockton. Didn't write about what Kirby Smart said, which I thought was the biggest takeaway from SEC Media Days. We're going to be live tomorrow, so we're going to bring the full breakdown. But what did we learn today from SEC Media Days, day two? What were the biggest takeaways, Ben? I didn't get a chance to watch. I didn't get a chance to read or follow. I hadn't gotten to go check out Jake's stories at the Ole Miss Spirit yet. What was the biggest takeaway? Well, for me, Kirby Smart reiterated what Greg Sankey said in his SEC Media Days opening address on Monday, that the SEC could potentially break off independently from the NCAA's enforcement structure. And Kirby said today, I've been there for a while. And honestly, I don't blame him. Honestly, nothing's getting fixed. And the SEC's saying, you know what? We'll do our own thing, which is essentially bringing about the reality of Dan Mullen, who has said the only sensible thing about how you fix college football a couple of months ago when they said, how do you fix it, Dan? He goes, blow it up and start over. This is what that would be. Do I think it'll ever get to that point? No, but the fact that the two most recognizable voices in the league, if you're talking about just league leaders, when it comes to authoritative voices on this stuff, are both saying, yeah, I'm ready to roll. Oh boy, what a grim, bleak outlook it is right now for 2026, 27, 28, 29, as far as the future of college football with no rules. But for now, Ole Miss is going for a title. And for now, that's all that really matters. For now, Trinidad Chambliss is finally getting the just due credit that he's long deserved all offseason by being praised at SEC Media Days. Chase Daniel, who played Ole Miss when he was a Missouri quarterback, I remember it. Chase Daniel has had nothing but good things to say about Trinidad, coming out and saying straight up he's the best quarterback in the SEC, if not the country. Chris Doering backed him up today. Jordan Rogers backed him up yesterday. Brooks Austin has been beating that drum all summer. The film guy is the guy to follow if you want to just talk ball and get it brought to you straight just about the ball. And today, he joins us on Talk of Champions because Brad is on the scene in Tampa. We go to him now. This is Brad Logan from Tampa with Brooks Austin, and this is Talk of Champions.
Welcome back to SEC Media Day here with Brooks Austin, the film guy. Brooks, you kind of went viral with the Ole Miss fan base with your love of Trinidad Chambliss. What do you think about this team, and what are your thoughts? Give us a film breakdown of the Rebels.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm much happier to go viral with the Ole Miss fan base for something positive than negative. Man, one of the most passionate fan bases that has ever existed in college football, and that serves a tremendous purpose. in nowadays in day and age of college football. But all right, so the Trinidad like thing for me was going back and watching the Ole Miss LSU game, and I think they played that game before Georgia last year. Is that correct? Is my memory serving me right? Or maybe that was after. Either way, I'm watching the LSU game, and he's making throws that are like NFL elite over and over and over again. And I'm like, all right, this is more than just some twitched up, you know, guy that can run the football that's like a limited passer. No. This is an elite, accurate thrower. Can throw over the middle of the field, can throw vertically in the seams, got a big enough arm to throw outside the numbers. Like, the more and more I watch him, and that's why I felt like I felt and tweeted what I tweeted about him being, should be unanimously the best returning quarterback in college football. And by the way, this week, I think that's picking up a little steam.
It is.
I'm hearing a lot more takes like that, and rightfully
to be fair, and the Ole Miss fans will tell you, you were the first on that train.
Well, I don't want the credit for it. His film is the credit. Yeah. Like, just watch it. Like, if you don't feel that way about him, you're not watching what he's actually done. Because there is no, apart from the red zone, because he is a little bit shorter in stature than most, you know, NFL-style quarterbacks, the red zone passing gets tipped. The red zone passing gets tight. We have to rely more on the run game. But other than that, there is nothing he doesn't do well, right, as a quarterback. He's elite with his legs. He causes problems as a scrambler and as a design runner. He's great in what I call 1-2-3 ball throwing. Right, he can throw a ball on a line accurately. He can throw it with a little bit of touch accurately, and he can throw the moon ball accurately. Right, like he does all of these things at an extremely high level. Getting to see him in person, hell, 3 times last year. I watched him Georgia Ole Miss both times, and then I went out to the Fiesta Bowl when they beat up on Miami, and lost that game tight. But watching him in pregame, you realize just how twitchy he is. I mean, there's a viral clip of him going through the bags, and it's like the first 2 guys go, and then he's the third one, and it's like you can tell who the starter is. But I was standing right there on the sideline and thinking, my God, I don't think I've ever seen feet move like this, right? And that's very important as a quarterback. Like, how quickly can we get our lower body to where our mind and our eyes know we need to go? And just like his ability to have all the right answers. You know, like there's multiple times last year where teams are just throwing everything at him because they can't get him off script. And he knows where he's vulnerable in protection. He knows where he's got room to work. He knows where there's air and breath in the pocket. He's really freaking good. And there's a lot of people when I made that opinion that was like, oh, it's because he's old. I mean, good God, he's old. I mean, he might be old in age. By the way, he's 5 under 5. He's going to be as old as everybody playing college football pretty soon if this Save College Sports Act passes. But he's new to big-time football. Like, no shouts at Ferris State. I mean, we just got done talking about it before the show. I'm a D2 guy myself.
Right.
But, like, no shots to the D2, but it ain't this.
Yeah.
It ain't playing SEC football. So there's a lot. I think there's room for growth because we are really a second-year starter in this league. And I was impressed, and tremendously impressed, how quickly he picked it up last year and never really faltered. I don't think he had a bad game. You know what I mean? Like, they leaned on the run game, I think, against South Carolina, but that was about it. I mean, he played pretty damn flawlessly all year long.
You've got a great perspective. We visited briefly about college football, and you being a former player, you know, you've been in those locker rooms in some adverse situations, and when Ole Miss kind of went down the road, it was going down with Lane and went to winning the Egg Bowl and what's going to happen with the Iron Bowl. But Pete kind of just stayed the course, and we visited with Pete last week or a couple of weeks ago at the coaching convention. He talked about it doesn't really matter who leads you out of the tunnel. It's all about staying core and true to what you believe. I'd love your thoughts as a former player. How do you think Ole Miss handled that from an administration standpoint down to a head coaching standpoint, trying to navigate those waters?
I mean, you couldn't have handled it any better than they did, right, on the football performance aspect of it. Like, I don't get into all the jargon and the who's right, who's wrong, did they handle, should they have let him coach the game? No, they shouldn't have let him coach the game. He's the head coach of the LSU Tigers, you know what I mean? Like, you can't do that. But, man, I was so incredibly impressed with Pete Golding and his players, their ability, like we talk about all the time in the football world, blocking out the noise.
Yeah.
I had a high school football coach talk about putting on horse blinders where we can't see what's out here. Yeah. We're just focused on our task at hand. But that's so easy to talk about. That's not easy to execute. especially nowadays when all these kids are on their phone the whole time, they're scrolling through what the internet's talking about, they're listening to all the yahoos like me giving opinions, and they played so together and so tight. And for Pete Golding, and I just got done sitting down with him, and he might admit this, he wouldn't admit it publicly, but I felt like he outcoached Kirby Smart in that football game.
There have been other people that have said that.
And the idea that you're going to outcoach Kirby Smart in your first playoff game ever, like your first time really doing this. I know we had a run at it against Tulane, but no offense to the Green Wave, but it's Tulane. Man, just left like, my God, what a job. You know what I mean? And having people, knowing people on that Ole Miss staff at the time that were still doing that dual role thing.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin did everything he could to make sure those guys were distracted.
Yeah.
You know, New Orleans ain't far from Baton Rouge. It ain't far. They were having position and coaching meetings during the week of Ole Miss prep at LSU. That coaching staff could not have been more distracted, and that football team went out and did what they did. That's incredible. You know what I mean? And it's a lot more, and I'm sure Pete gives it a lot to his players. It's a huge testament to the player-led leadership that they had last year. And that's the key to any championship football team. Like all these great teams, you'll hear coaches talk about, well, we're player-led. You know, you got great player leadership. That's the key. And y'all had it last year.
Let's talk about film for a minute. And Ole Miss's offensive coordinator, Charlie Weiss, has headed off to LSU. John David Baker, who I know you're familiar with in East Carolina, coming in, is familiar with Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. Not so much familiar with Pete Golding, but, you know, in the world of college football, you know, as you know, everybody kind of knows everybody. What are your thoughts on John David Baker coming in as OC and Charlie Weiss going out, but the core of that offense returning?
Yeah, John David, if you watch what they did at ECU, I would label them a wide choice offense.
Okay.
I don't think that's what y'all are going to do. I also don't, and I'm not trying to demean John David because I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, but Joe Judge is probably going to be calling plays quite a bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or at least establishing the offensive identity of what it is that they are about to do and what they are about to be and how they attack opponents. I don't think enough people, especially around here, are talking about Joe Judge enough. Where, yeah, like Charlie Weiss is a great play caller. He's a great offensive mind. He's great. Lane Kiffin's great in game, pulling that headset down and telling the quarterback the answer. But Joe Judge reached the pinnacle of the profession. He was an NFL head football coach. He didn't go great, but he got to become an NFL football coach because he was an NFL OC. You know what I mean? Like, I have a lot of I hold him in a high regard. Also, because like I watched the tape, and you can see last year, yeah, Lane's standing at the sticks. But Joe Judge is standing right next to him with the Waffle House card.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When they score a touchdown, Lane's running down doing the celebrations that he always does, hooting and hollering about the play call they just made. Joe Judge is the one turning around, telling everybody we're going for the PAT. You know, just stuff like that. Like, y'all didn't lose all the great coaches. In fact, y'all might have kept one of the better ones. You know what I mean? So that, to me, him being named the head coach of the offense, such a very unique title and a unique role. I'm sure John David will have a tremendous amount of involvement with what they do and who they are offensively, but when I study them this year, I'll be looking for core tenets and traits of what Joe Judge wants to be offensively, personally.
Visiting here with Brooks Austin at SEC Media Day, he's the film guy, and talking specifically about film, Kewon Lacy, Brooks is, I think, maybe if not the best running back coming back this year, maybe Ahmad Hardy, but what makes Kewon so good on film to you?
Ooh. First of all, he's a high pad runner.
Okay. Yeah.
He's elusive. He's electric. And when we talk about those things, I mean, he's almost like – he looks like Jeremiah Love when you watch him on tape. The difference is he's got more of a workload than any of these elusive electric backs have ever dreamed of having in college football. I think I counted it up. I think Kewon had 5 games last year of 30-plus carries. Jeremiah Love's career high in college was 17.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, or 20 or whatever it was. This dude's ability to just tote that thing over and over and over again is extremely impressive. You mentioned it, he might be the best. For me, he is. I know you didn't want to be Ole Miss biased guy saying that, but as the guy who watches the film, he is the best back in college football for my money. I like Ahmad Hardy too, especially when he's healthy. But I'm taking Kewon. all day of the week.
One thing that jumps out to me, and I'd love your thoughts on this, specifically at the next level, his pass blocking is really good.
Oh, yeah.
The pass pro is very good. How do you see Kiwan Lacy at the next level?
Elite. Like he'll be a. I think he should be a top 15 pick this coming up year. But you hit the nail on the head. His pass blocking cutups will make any offensive coordinator in the NFL look giddy. You know what I mean? They'll be happy to watch that and cut it up because it's not normal. It's not normal for those guys to get as much of a workload as he does and then realize, hey, we got Mike Fire down the A-gap. I got to go meet him at the line of scrimmage and jack his stuff up.
Yeah.
And I think I saw him get beat once, and it was like the first play of the game against Miami. Other than that, that dude is in lockstep as a pass protector. You're right.
Defensively, everybody kind of looks at the linebacker. Everybody's really excited about Luke Ferrelli, the transfer out of Cal, the Baylor transfer linebacker, Keaton Thomas. When you watch film, and I'm kind of talking broad-based SEC, mm-hmm. how important is the linebacker position? Ole Miss feels really good about its linebacker position.
Yeah.
And what do you foresee, the position for any team in the conference? What are you looking for on film?
So, used to, we would build walls in defense, right? Like the four down linemen would build one wall. The two linebackers would plug and scrape the holes that the four down linemen weren't filling, and then the safeties would have to roll down and play run support in C-gap and beyond, right? Off
yeah.
the tackle, the ball fell off, they'd have to go run and tackle. Nowadays, especially Ole Miss, teams are wrapping and twisting and stunting on rundowns, where 5 or 6 years ago, that's not what you know, we saved that for passing downs. Everybody runs TE stunts when we pass the ball. You guys are doing that stuff on every rundown. And what that creates from a linebacker's perspective is we have to be fast enough, quick enough, and explosive enough to make those guys right now. Okay, if they stack each other up, we've got to make them whole. We've got to run things down. We've got to be really, really quick and decisive with our decision-making processes. So I'll be interested to see how that works, how they fit in, because it is going to be a very new system from a what the guys in front of me are doing, right? Where I don't watch a ton of Baylor tape, but I don't know if they're as havoc wreaking or attempting to be as havoc wreaking as Ole Miss is. When I can tell you right now, for my money, Ole Miss does more on rundowns than anybody else. Like Alabama and Georgia kind of line up and play football on rundowns. You guys are twisting, rapping, stunting, creating as much junk as you possibly can. And what that requires is linebackers to be really, really fast
yeah.
and make people right when they're wrong in front of them. And you got two guys to do that.
Cam Franklin, obviously a big part of that defense.
He's number five,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, number five. And William Eccles is quite frankly maybe the best player athletic-wise on the team, the defensive tackle. So basically that leads up to the question, we've seen players like Suntarian Perkins. I want to ask you about him. When we look at Perkins, the player out of LSU, was really good his freshman year, and just kind of trickled off. What would you do with Suntarian Perkins this year off the edge for Ole Miss?
Bring him to my house and let him eat my diet?
Yeah, just put weight on him.
Yeah, just put some weight on him. Now, what I do respect about Suntarian is it ain't a lack of effort. And some of these twitched-up pass rushers, they're just like, hey, call me on third down. I'm going to take this first and second down playoff. He'll strain. He'll labor. He will do everything he can to hold the points. It's not – sometimes he's not big enough. You know what I mean? Which is why Cam Franklin's so important. I watched him last year, and I kept thinking, wait, he's how big?
Yeah.
I have to go back into the roster every time. It's like, wait, whoa, this is a 290-pound human? This guy moves like this? So, I don't know the answer to – how we get Suntarian bigger. I think we just are what we are, you know what I mean? And we kind of, as a defensive coordinator, we kind of have to alleviate those things elsewhere. Because, like I said, we're in year four now with Suntarian.
Yeah.
Holding the point is not what he is best at. And I know that because I watch other offensive coordinators attack him in that sense. You will watch it. Every first drive, they'll hunt number four and run support. They will run at him because they don't think he can hold the point. And he's gotten better at it, don't get me wrong. But it's just, we are what we are. We only have what God gave us so much. You know, he's not 6'5", he's not 250 pounds. So he has to win with a lot of effort and a lot of intensity, and he does that. By the way, Colin Simmons is the same way at Texas. Mm-hmm. He's just a little thicker, you know what I mean? But he's sawed off like that, too. He's got to be a dog. I mean, an absolute dog to do that at that size.
Protecting homes and businesses from the whims of nature, you need more than just quality materials. You require Riverland Roofing. Licensed, insured, and certified, Riverland Roofing offers not only the assurance of excellence, but a tailored approach to your unique structural needs and budget. To learn more about what Riverland Roofing can do for you and the community, call them at 662-644-4297 or visit riverlandroofing.com.
Anybody who's ever tried to book a hotel room in Oxford, Mississippi for an SEC weekend knows how quickly travel costs can add up. And honestly, the same thing applies for family vacations, beach trips, music festivals, or even getting away for a few days. That's why Outdoorsy is such a cool option. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the country. And they make it incredibly easy to rent an RV or camper without actually owning one. There are thousands of options nationwide, many of them right in your own neighborhood. And you've got choices. You can drive it yourself, tow it, or my favorite option, have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. Plus, there's built-in peace of mind with comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance included. And especially for families or larger groups, it can often be more affordable than booking multiple hotel rooms. Whether you're planning the ultimate Ole Miss tailgate, a family vacation, or just looking to turn the drive into part of the adventure, Outdoorsy is worth checking out. Talk of Champions listeners can get all service fees removed from their booking in 2026 with code TOC at Outdoorsy.com. That's Outdoorsy, OUTDOORSY.com. And use my promo code TOC for Talk of Champions at checkout to remove service fees. That's Outdoorsy, a proud sponsor of Talk of Champions. One thing I've learned over the years doing this job is that you never really know what somebody else is carrying. We spend a lot of time talking football, recruiting, and Ole Miss. But life's a lot bigger than sports. Everybody goes through seasons where they need somebody to talk to. That's one reason I found BetterHelp's latest State of Stigma report interesting. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise. Yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. It's kind of a reminder that even though we've gotten better about talking about mental health, asking for help can still be difficult. If somebody in your life is struggling, don't be afraid to encourage them to talk to someone. Sometimes having that conversation is the hardest step. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com.
Rebels, your truck is here. Alan Samuels Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Oxford presents the all-new Ram Rebel. It's Ram, the Rebel way. Send an unmistakable signal. Rebel, 24/7. Ram Rebel, from your friend in the car business. Alan Samuels Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Oxford.
Come by, let's be friends.
I'm Warrior Philip Hearn. Raising my family here in Mississippi, I've tried to teach my kids to help others. I learned that from my parents. And as a Mississippi lawyer, I want to help you too. If you're hurt in a traffic accident, 18-wheeler wreck, or have insurance trouble, call 601-720-3541. That's my cell. You call, I'll answer. Let's get started. Make your first call to the Hearn Law Firm today.
That was Brooks Austin, the film guy, with Brad Logan of Talk of Champions, live from Tampa for SEC Media Days Day 2. While SEC Media Days Day 1 was kind of a dud, Day 2 has brought some real interesting nuggets, not the least of which what Kirby said about breaking off, reaffirming what Greg Sankey said in his league opening address, or SEC Media Days opening address on Monday, which is wild to consider that the most preeminent voices are saying that open and honestly, and no one bats an eye. That had like stopped everyone in their tracks in the 2010s, but now we're just trying to figure out what the structure is, because it sure as heck doesn't seem like there's going to be one. DGG commits tomorrow. Today is Tuesday, Wednesday, July 22nd. he's going to choose Tennessee or Ohio State. All signs point to Tennessee. We've been talking about that for the last couple of days. It's been Ohio State, but Tennessee has positioned itself perfectly. He gets to keep his number zero, and more importantly, he's going to get $2 million as a high school running back at a devalued position, but he is a generational talent. I'm just saying we're in a different time, in a different world. Ole Miss was willing to pay it, offer his teammate, same thing as the other schools. Tennessee's going to win out for now. Who's to say he doesn't hold all the way to signing day? But once he does, do you realize there will only be nine total blue chip prospects committed, left uncommitted. Everybody else will have been committed. That's 95, 6, 7, 8, 9%. I'm bad at math, but nine out of hundreds blue chip prospects gone. We do not live in the same time as we used to. Recruiting is different. Ole Miss has to December to flip any number of guys, including Caden Moss. It's now flip season. That's how the recruiting calendar has changed. As far as the football calendar, it's stayed the same, if not getting longer, and no one's doing anything about the explosion in the numbers and the margins. And Kirby Smart is saying, I don't care anymore. Let's do our own thing. I think Dan Mullen was right. Blow it up and start over, which for the SEC is, we'll go about it our own way. We'll branch off. We'll be the AEW, you know, the first AEW of college football. We'll see if they ever do it. I don't think they will. But, man, what a grim, bleak outlook. That's what we're talking about here, rather than just saying, hey, collectively bargain with the players. Ross Dellinger has been all over all of these national stories as the preeminent voice nationally for college football for years now. Friend, formerly from this state, Mississippi, where he covered Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Southern Miss, all number of schools and big events and big stories for the Clarion Ledger. He's gone on now to work for Yahoo and On3. He's in the congressional rooms there at the table writing stuff down. He's that dude. He breaks these big news stories, and he joins us now on Talk of Champions to talk about these big picture things. I don't think the SEC is ever breaking off. I don't know what anybody's doing, period. Maybe Ross does. This is Talk of Champions.
Here with our good friend Ross Dellinger. Ross, Yahoo Sports, On3. Your thoughts so far on SEC Media Days? Not been just a ton until we await, obviously, the circus on Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. Usually LSU is on day one, has been for maybe a decade or more, and now they put them on day four to keep all the media here for the whole week. A lot of us often leave on day three. I haven't been here for day four in a long time. But I'll be here for day four this year, I think. So, yeah it's been kind of quiet, actually. The first, couple days have been a little bit quiet. I don't know why that is. There just haven't been a whole lot of buzz or really noteworthy quotes. Maybe I've just been distracted with other things. But there's a lot of other things going on, obviously, away from here.
Commissioner Sankey opened up talking about the two points I took away was, number one, the question about breaking away from the NCAA. Your thoughts on that process, and also the nine-game schedule is huge right now with everybody's schedule out.
Yeah. The SEC, I think, in a serious manner has been talking about the self-governance sort of breakaway model for 6 months or so, I'd say, back in January, February. Actually, it was the Ole Miss-Georgia Sugar Bowl game where I heard about it. And so it was right around, or not Sugar, yeah, it was Sugar Bowl game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it was right around that. So they've been talking about it for a good amount of time, and it's just accelerated. The idea that the SEC has is that if they regulate a smaller group of schools instead of the 350 that the NCAA regulates, that they'll avoid antitrust legal challenges around rules like eligibility and one-time transfer and, compensation cap. So all those things would be SEC rules and not NCAA rules, and would be enforced from the league. And I think those, as the commissioner said, those conversations are very real and will continue to happen. And I'm guessing it will happen if the congressional bill doesn't pass.
Yeah, that was my next point, and you led perfectly into that. Where do things stand, in your opinion, in regards to legislation between the governing bodies of athletics versus the governing body of the United States?
Yeah, right now there's this bill in the Senate that would allow the NCAA and the conferences to regulate some of the things we just talked about, eligibility and transfer and the cap agents and all that stuff. And but the only thing sort of slower historically than the NCAA is Congress.
Yeah.
So it takes a long time. This is year 7 of the NCAA's sort of lobbying effort for a bill, and finally gotten to the point that probably the furthest along, I would say, a bill has gone, basically. And I don't know if it will go any further, just because there's just a lot of issues, and there's a lot of competing interests right now, and certainly the SEC and Big Ten are right now opposing the bill, which the lawmakers are trying to change. I think they're trying to get them on board with some revisions, but as of Tuesday afternoon, those revisions haven't been finalized or sent to the two conferences.
Obviously, Ole Miss has been talked about, not only the tampering situation with Dabo, but about the contract, any litigation with the players that were out of their contracts at Oxford, headed down to Baton Rouge. What are your thoughts on the litigation in regards to contracts right now in regards to Ole Miss and LSU?
Yeah. I think there's a couple players, right, $1 million or so combined that Ole Miss is owed. I know they sent LSU letters. They sent the two players letters back maybe in the winter, spring, to try to procure that buyout money. I think it's a responsibility, from what I understand, of the players, but the fact that they went to LSU, I think Ole Miss believes, what also at least partially responsible is the school. The buyout stuff right now in college sports is really tricky because the contracts aren't employment contracts, so they're not as strict as you would have in a coach's buyout of an employment contract. That's how some people view it, and others view it as just as strict, and so there's a lot of lawsuits over that. There, Sorsby in Cincinnati, there's a lawsuit there about his buyout. There's a lawsuit from a Georgia player about his buyout, defensive lineman who went to Missouri. I'm going to guess we're going to see a lawsuit here.
Yeah. Saw you on the trail last year, obviously a big season for Ole Miss. Your thoughts about Pete Golding as head coach and just kind of what you're anticipating this year from the Rebels?
Yeah, it's the situation with Trinidad. I mean, I go back to that Sugar Bowl game against Georgia, and I can't recall a better fourth quarter from a quarterback in a playoff game.
Yeah.
Really, I can't recall one. It was stunning, and the things that he does, and shoot, he even almost made enough plays to beat Miami in the semifinal too, late in that game. He's just really an impressive kid, and so when I think of Ole Miss, I think of him right now. That's kind of all I think of. But I know obviously they're Pete has had that defense playing pretty well for a while, and I'm sure that will continue. And he's kind of, Pete's kind of an under radar sort of guy, right? It just doesn't talk a lot, doesn't crave the spotlight in any way. And that's a little different than the last guy.
Just a little. the way that Lane kind of burned everything to the ground. At the end of the day, I think, I've said all along that Lane was great for Ole Miss and he won a lot of games. It's kind of the way he left. But that September 19th game, Ross, I have to tell you, you've been around, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, your days, Clarion, ladies, you know the state very well, from Louisiana. It's kind of got all the makings of that perfect firestorm of SEC football on steroids.
It does. It's I was joking with some people. I'm from Biloxi, originally, and so have a lot of Mississippi ties, and that the Mississippi National Guard needs to probably come on down to Oxford and guard Lane and everything, because it's probably going to be. We've certainly had plenty of returns of coaches to hostile environments. I think of Lane, going back to Tennessee, obviously. Nick Saban going back to LSU. And we have plenty of more, but I don't know that I can recall one quite like this. And I think it's sort of, part of that is the era. Well, part of that is Lane, but part of that is the era too, where players can leave with their coach and go. And we certainly saw that happen and saw Lane try to take more players. And, I was just talking to Alex Golish here of Auburn, and he took 13 players from South Florida. And the South Florida people naturally are not happy about that, So it's Lane plus kind of the era that we're in, and then all this other stuff surrounding, and just historically with Ole Miss and LSU. I mean, it's like, it is my, when I covered LSU for 6 years, and that game to me was always even trumped Alabama or any other game that LSU played as far as atmosphere and excitement of the week. There's just something different about LSU Ole Miss, and it is a fun, it's like my favorite rivalry.
He's Ross Jellinger, does a great job at Yahoo Sports and also On Three. Ross, thanks a lot, buddy. Mm-hmm.
Our thanks to Ross Dellinger for joining Brad Logan in Tampa for SEC Media Days. More interviews coming all throughout the week. Don't forget, tomorrow, Wednesday, July 22nd, we'll be live for Talk of Champions at 1 p.m. Central Time. Live reporting from SEC Media Days. You'll hear from Pete Golding and Kewon Lacy, Trinidad Chambliss, William Eccles. But you can also read what all of those players or what the contemporaries of those players had to say about them at the Ole Miss Spirit. Jake Thompson's been there since Sunday. He's talked to Georgia players today. He'll have more tomorrow. You just got to read about it in the Ole Miss Spirit. OleMissSpirit.com. If they're on three, sign up today for $1. Brad got on the scene today. Zach Berry arrives on Wednesday. So full coverage. That's why I'm the man in the chair this week. That's why I'm sitting here instead of going and enjoying the Tampa, Florida miserable heat, but they're indoors the whole time, but going and enjoy the festivities. Because somebody had to bring all of this to you as those guys go and have an absolute blast, which is the unofficial kickoff of SEC football or the college football season in general. ACC Media Day doesn't generate this kind of buzz. Day one was a dud. Day two has been kind of fun. What did Mike Griffith of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution think about day two of SEC Media Days? Let's find out by going back to Tampa and Brad Logan for SEC Media Days. This is Talk of Champions.
Brad Logan alongside Mike Griffith, AJC, and Mike, you cover Kirby and Georgia very, very closely, and you saw that Sugar Bowl. I love your thoughts on that game and just kind of how Pete handled himself during that game and the Rebels come away with a big win.
Well, you know, first of all, the first thing I noticed, and again, this is kind of a bit of a tangent on the game, but the first thing you noticed was all the powder blue, and I think that made a difference. Yeah. I really do. I felt like Ole Miss came out. You could hear that crowd. You know, I've been to a lot of Georgia games, and I'm trying to think if I've seen another bowl or playoff where there were more fans from the other team, but mm-hmm. the fact that those Ole Miss fans showed up was my first clue that this game may not go like I thought it would go based on what I saw in the fourth quarter in Athens. Right. You know, right, I'm just thinking, well, last time we saw this team, you know, they were on their back and Georgia had all the momentum and, you know, Lane was crying in the post game and acting like he could never win another game in his life.
Yeah.
So, but a different Ole Miss team showed up. And the physicality that I saw along the offensive and defensive lines right from the beginning was key. Now, I talked to those guys leading up to the game, and I was just so impressed in all the interviews, you know, how focused this team was. I mean, you think about Ole Miss, and it's not like this is a team that had been in the playoffs every year or really had a whole lot of limelight. And sometimes when you get in those situations, it can paralyze those players. You know, all of a sudden, all the lights and the cameras and the interviews. But that team had such unity. And the way they came together in those interviews leading up to the game, you just felt like if they got off to a good start, this could be interesting. Well, Georgia actually led at halftime, you know, and I think Pete had a clock management issue there in the second quarter. They mm-hmm. got away from it. I thought, okay, you know, this is Georgia's game. But I'll tell you, Ole Miss got back at it. You look at the quarter yardage, I think Ole Miss outgained Georgia in every quarter of that game. So while Georgia was winning on the scoreboard, it was a little smoke and mirrors. It wasn't like they were ever dominating or in control of that game. And then once Ole Miss got ahead, took advantage of some Georgia mistakes. They had that errant snap.
Yeah.
You know, their starting center was out. Ole Miss capitalized on that. And then in the end, Trinidad Chambliss was amazing. You know, I don't use this word lightly, but Jordan-esque. I mean, the plays that he was making, you know, he's playing out of his mind. And you give Ole Miss credit for that, you know, because some coaches don't let their quarterback go like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of contain him. But I think Pete realized it was kind of an all-or-nothing deal. And by the way, I loved it that Pete didn't apologize for the situation. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would, you know, thought an interim coach would just kind of quietly come in there and, well, I'm in charge now. And you know, Pete came in forcefully. This is who he was. This is what he was. This is how it's going to be. I thought he, you know, really took charge of the situation. Didn't try to be somebody he wasn't. And the way the Rebels played, they were the better team. And, you know, really, I was kind of surprised they didn't beat Miami, frankly. But it was an impressive team. But whether it was Lane coaching or whether it was Pete coaching, you got to have a catalyst.
Yeah.
And I just felt like Trinidad was that guy. You know, he was the guy that everybody rallied around and believed in. And boy, they got him back another year. Yeah. So holy cow, let's see what happens.
Yeah, you know, with that offense, the core offense returning, they're missing their both bookend tackles and those wide receivers that made the big plays down the stretch. Oh, yeah. With the exception of Deuce Alexander, they're headed off to the NFL. But if you've got a situation like that, and kind of you've been following the SEC for a long time, you got a first-year head coach thrown into the playoffs, how much can Pete kind of lean into what happened during that playoff run, and kind of what are you anticipating seeing from Pete and Ole Miss this year?
Well, yeah, he's a first-time head coach, but he's been around a long time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, Kirby had been in the league a long mm-hmm. time and been in a lot of battles with Nick Saban. And, you know, when you coach with Coach Saban, I think you learn. You have a lot of structure and a lot of staples, and then you kind of put your spin on it. Some guys have done it better than others. And, again, I think the most important thing is that Pete Golding needs to be Pete Golding.
Yeah.
And not apologize for it. It's a very different style and, you know, the way he represents. I know it's different, but he makes headlines too. And I hope he doesn't apologize for being who he is and what he is and how he does it, because I think that can work for Ole Miss. I do. I know Lane was the funny guy on Twitter and the good-looking guy behind the microphone everybody put on TV. Hey, Pete does not apologize for being a ball coach and doing it his way. And I like that aggressive nature that I feel from him. And I think that probably translates well to the players. The Rebels need to keep a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, they've only been in the playoff once. And frankly, there's a lot of people that don't think they're going to go back.
Right.
You know, it's all Lane Kiffin, right? And, oh, things just fell right. This is their window to establish their program. Mm-hmm. And they need to take advantage of it. And they need to get some early momentum. And I know you've talked about that LSU game a lot. But that's the game you got to win. I mean, you got to win that game. You got to win that football game. That game is pivotal. I know it's one game, but that's the game that sends the message that this program is for real and has truly been established.
That's actually a really good point. It's almost like if you can get past that game, if you're an Ole Miss fan, if you are Trinidad Chambliss, and most importantly, if you are Pete Golding, you get that win, then you'd be like, okay, it's over.
Yeah.
Let's move forward.
Yeah.
One thing that I have said, Mike, I'd love your thoughts on this. You followed Kirby ever since he was with Nick Saban, yeah. And now, of course, head coach at Georgia. Not necessarily wins and losses, but have you seen any tendencies between Pete Golding and Kirby Smart? Because yeah. I've always said he's kind of that mold, the yep. way he's kind of football, very regimented, and kind of hard-nosed guy.
Well, he's a defensive-minded head coach, number one.
Yeah.
And he stresses physicality, number two. And number three, as I said, he's very bold and does not apologize for his ways or put up with any second-guessing. Now, it's easy when coaches get in that position, and I don't think this will happen to Pete, but sometimes they start worrying a little bit too much about what the perimeter says, what other people are saying, or how maybe start second-guessing. Like I said, if Pete can be Pete, because Kirby's been Kirby
yeah.
in that sense, and maintain that defensive and physical edge, you know, for years and years. And I've done talk radio for, I don't know, 25, 30 years or something. There was a time, I will say this, that I'm hoping maybe nobody watching remembers this. But back earlier in this millennium, mm-hmm. I might have said something about Ole Miss being kind of soft way back when.
Yeah.
And being the game on a schedule that teams look forward to. Mm-hmm. I might have said that. And damned if they didn't almost beat Tennessee that week that I said it, by the way, because cut tape recorded and played it for the team. I'm not saying that powder blue looks pretty. Ain't nothing soft about it, folks. Let me tell you, that was one. To beat the Georgia Bulldogs, you got to be physical. And I've only seen Kirby's teams get out physical maybe two or three times in the last 10 years. They got out physical that night. Ole Miss was hunting. And if they can keep that edge, and it's hard to do, because this is the trick for any head coach. When you have success, there is a tendency, and complacency is a dangerous word, but there is a tendency to live a little bit off that success.
Yeah.
We've already done it. We've already been there. If they can somehow keep that mentality. Now, I know Lane splitting on the program lit that fire last year. But what Ole Miss has to realize is, you know, in terms of national perception, you haven't arrived. It was a fantastic season.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic story. But it's kind of like some of them favorite songs. And you say, what other song did they sing? One-hit wonder. Is Ole Miss a one-hit wonder? Or is this a program that is now established? You know, I think the fact that Keith Carter is your athletic director means everything. You've got a good administration that knows what they're doing. I mean, I think the world of Keith. I think he's made some very good decisions with his hires and the way he manages that program. I think the image of the program is kind of on the line. Is Ole Miss the one-hit wonder, or is this an established football program that can make the playoff in consecutive years? And to me, it's pass-fail. It's not about the SEC championship game, because the schedule has a lot to do with who gets in the game, if we're being honest. I'm talking to Jimbo Fisher about it last week at ACC. He said, you know, if all 18 teams or 16 teams played each other, it'd be one thing, but that's not how it works.
Right.
Right? But I believe Ole Miss is good enough to make the college football playoff. And then you're in the second season. And then you just don't know who's healthy, who do you run into, how does the game shake out, what are the breaks. But to me, pass-fail for Ole Miss is do they get in the college football playoff or not.
Mike Griffin with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution here at ACC Media Days. Mike, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Life is made up of moments. We care about those moments as much as you do. We are Modern Woodmen, a fraternal financial services organization. Member-owned, not stockholder-run. Since 1883, we've supported families, strengthened communities, and helped people reach their financial goals. From protection to saving to retirement planning, let us help you plan for those special moments in your life. We are Modern Woodmen of America.
Fiber and wireless, together at last. The One Plan. Fiber and wireless for $99 a month. With a 5-year price guarantee and a free 5G phone for everyone. Fiber and wireless for $99 a month with a 5-year price guarantee. CSpire, customer inspired.
That was Mike Griffith of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. This is Talk of Champions. And now to close it out, Matt Moscona, every Ole Miss fan's favorite LSU media guy right now. I know what you're going to say. I haven't seen the interview. We'll talk about it more tomorrow because this is closing us out. But, and I don't know Matt Moscona personally. But if everything is wrestling, no person outside of maybe Blake Ruffino, no person has better positioned themselves in the media as the ultimate Ole Miss media heel, quite like Matt Moscona. Do I think most of it is performative? Yes. Do I respect the hustle? Sure. We all fall victim to it sometimes, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I would like to get to know him, shake his hand, talk to him, really feel him out. Brad tried to at SEC Media Days, and this is what he learned.
Here with Matt Moscona. Appreciate you joining us here on the Talk of Champions. Matt, obviously the circus is coming on Thursday, but what have you seen so far here at the SEC Media Days?
I think most interestingly for me anyway, so far through 2 days, has been Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I think I probably was maybe underselling them. They were a playoff team a year ago. Mm-hmm. We know they lost the home game to Bama, but that defense was as good as any in the country. They return a ton from it. Yeah. Mateer looks healthy.
Yeah.
The schedule is brutal. I mean, welcome to the SEC. Everyone's is, but theirs might be even more so. You know, but if they take care of Michigan week two in Ann Arbor, I think Oklahoma's going to be a playoff team, and they may have what it takes not just to be a playoff team, but actually be a national championship contender this year.
I want to get your thoughts briefly on Commissioner Sankey's opening remarks yesterday. A lot of talk about the 9-game schedule. What are your thoughts on that 9-game schedule, and what are your thoughts about the possibility of a breaking away, if you will, from the NCAA?
Okay, so I am an outlier in that, like, I only want to see Power 4 games forever, but I want equitable scheduling.
Yeah.
I want every single Power 4 team to only schedule Power 4 teams. I never want to see a G5 or an FCS game ever again, because nobody gets the schedule and goes, I can't wait to see LSU play McNeese.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
It's, I can't wait for Ole Miss to play Jacksonville State. Nobody wants to see it. They're sort of necessary evils because it's a gate receipt for the home team. But it doesn't make a lick of sense for the SEC to play 9 and have a Power 4 non-conference mandate when you're not going to be rewarded by it for it by the committee. And the committee has shown, like, they are only concerned with the second number on your win-loss record. It doesn't matter how – Indiana, 2 years ago, Indiana's 11-1. They played 2 ranked teams. They got their head kicked in by both of them. But they had one loss. You could look at a couple of years back when you had 4 SEC teams with 3 losses – all played a more difficult schedule, but Indiana got in because they had one loss, and the SEC teams played that jumble, and they all were left out. So by going to a 9th game without guarantees, you've basically just disadvantaged yourself. So if the objective is to win championships, you made it harder.
What are you looking for from Pete Golding tomorrow? Specifically, I mean, we don't have to go down the rabbit hole about playoff coach versus he's got a full season as head coach. What are you going to kind of be looking for tomorrow?
Yeah, it's so interesting because he's one of six new head coaches. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most interesting storyline here this week is just all the – because, Brad, a year ago there were none. There was no coaching turnover. So a year ago, media days was all the same guys. So a lot of turnover. I think for Pete Golding, I'm going to be most interested to see how he establishes himself as Pete Golding's Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. Not the guy who was on Lane Kiffin's staff and he's taken over Lane Kiffin's program, which happens sometimes with interims. I mean, look, LSU promoted an interim with Ed Ogeron, right? Mm-hmm. And so establishing your own culture and identity, I don't even know that that happens at an event like this. That happens when you start coaching and winning games. Mm-hmm. They got a great start on winning a couple of playoff games.
Yeah.
But how does Pete Golding, Ole Miss full-time head coach, the representative of that brand, start to look? And how different does it look from Lane Kiffin?
I talked with Peter Burns a little bit ago. You and I have talked briefly about Thursday and Lane Kiffin and, you know, the carnival's coming to town. And I'll tell you, you know, what Peter said is, Brad, honestly, what makes it so exciting, I have no idea if we're going to get just very buttoned up down the middle or we're just going to get, you know, the balls of the wall, if you will. What are you anticipating from Lane on
Thursday? Anticipating him, you know, whispering, doing Nick Saban's hand gestures.
Yeah.
Being very calculated in everything he says. I do anticipate there will be a few viral moments, some probably funny, some probably indirect shots at Ole Miss. And I also think that he is going to try to downplay expectations on LSU this season. Because I think deep down, Lane Kiffin knows that if you extrapolate the next 5 years, I think Lane Kiffin at LSU will have a better record over the next 5 years mm-hmm. than Pete Golding will at Ole Miss. However, he knows what he left. Mm-hmm. And Chambliss and Lacey and their dudes. I mean, it's, I think, the best quarterback in the conference and an All-American running back. And they got a loaded gun. And they got to play in Oxford. So I think Lane is intentionally trying to temper expectations, not in the long term, but in this season. I think we are going to hear that on Thursday.
We're busy here with Matt Moscone. Does a great job on 104.5 in Baton Rouge in New Orleans. And, of course, terrific job of the Locked On LSU podcast. We've heard kind of from Hunt Palmer his thoughts on the whole Prince William, Miami Ellen, and
Devin Harper.
Devin Harper, thank
you.
Yeah. Where you stand on that in regards to contracts and, you know, everything between Ole Miss and LSU, for, in your opinion?
So my take on this, I think, got a little misunderstood. And so I'm going to be very clear. I think that Ole Miss is right to enforce a contract. Mm-hmm. And I think, Brad, like, let me not use something that would have any emotional tie for an LSU and Ole Miss fan. Look at what happened with Washington and Demond Williams. Demond Williams was going to leave Washington, but he had a $4 million 100% buyout of his rev share deal at Washington, which is why he's still the quarterback at Washington. Washington held him to that contract. That's working. That's why you have a contract. I have a contract with my employer. Like, that's why we have contracts with penalties if you break a contract. So, yes, Ole Miss should absolutely hold those players to the buyout of their deal. That's, you want to cut down on the transient nature of college football? Start putting in enforceable, punitive buyouts in these deals. So I have no problem whatsoever with Keith Carter and Ole Miss trying to collect that buyout money. What I have a problem with was him naming the names of the student athletes publicly, because across the land of college football, when you have 1,500 players every cycle go in the portal, this is not unique. Mm-hmm. But I don't know of any other athletic director that's publicly named names. And I think that this is a continuing war of words, Lane with the Vanity Fair, which I don't know how you feel about, Brad. I absolutely believe that was calculated on his part. I think Lane is very smart and very intentional.
Right.
One of the things I've learned about him. I don't think he slips up in press conferences or when cameras or mics are rolling. But I think similarly that was Keith Carter trying to jab LSU in the nose.
Yeah.
And that felt petty to me.
When we look at the world of social media, you and I have to live there, whether we like it or not. We've seen Lane take a step back. And from what we saw I'd love your thoughts on this. It felt like whatever the comment was made in Vanity Fair that regarded race relations, not anything really, you know, going into it, but it regarded race relations. It felt like Lane really backed off social media. What are you all seeing from a social media perspective? Because as we talked earlier, Lane Kiffin, you know, he's up and down in regards to, you know, all of us. We saw in Oxford, it was crazy at times in regards to social media. Now it's very quiet. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, what I'm seeing is nothing, because it has been just quiet over the last 2 months on social media. It's interesting. The thing I've been asked is, like, was that an LSU mandate? Did they tell him stop? And, like, I've asked that question, and I've been told, no, that's a decision Lane made. Mm-hmm. So, and actually, I believe that, because also, Brad, I don't think anybody at LSU is telling Lane anything what he has to do.
Right.
And nobody's telling him no. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you just think about all the staff that he got, the intention was to spend about $25 million on this roster, and every time another player went in the portal that they wanted, they went and got him full bore, and they ended up almost doubling that budget number. This roster is going to push $50 million this year because nobody's telling Lane Kiffin no, because they want to be all in to win. They understand the importance. That's why they were willing to pay Brian Kelly $54 million to go away. It's more expensive to lose than it is to spend money to win. So I think Lane taking a step back is just – you're trying to explain that away. You're trying to explain, I don't know how to get inside of Lane Kiffin's mind and what he's thinking with those things, but I generally think Lane is probably like 4, 5, 6 steps ahead of most people all the time. He's just a very smart, cunning man. And for whatever reason that is that he stepped back, I think that was his doing, not LSU's pressure on you.
This is not smart to do, but we can do this in the world of college football in regards to the media. LSU with a tough opportunity against Clemson coming to Baton Rouge. Ole Miss has to have a neutral site with Louisville. Let's just say chalk prevails and September 9th gets here. I'd love your thoughts. Whose team is more important to win that game? Is it more important for LSU?
No, it's Ole Miss.
You don't think it's LSU?
Ole Miss has got to win that game this year. In home, at home, after Lane just left. They've got to win that game. Yeah. I still think, despite the fact that Golding won 2 playoff games, Pete's still got to prove that he can go win consistently. And, man, if ever there was the opportunity, the example I've given, maybe is the best comp, is when Nick Saban went to Bama the first year, LSU went to Tuscaloosa that year and won a hard-fought game. Mm-hmm. But that was a Bama team that was not very good, Brad. But it was like, it was one of those where you knew, like, Les Miles, you better get him now. And look, LSU did, and they won the national championship in 07. It feels like that with Golding and Ole Miss. Like, you better get him this year, mm-hmm. in year one, when you've got Chambliss and you've got Lacey and you're at home and all the things they're in. Man, you know better than I do with that fan base. I can't imagine what it would be like if Ole Miss loses that game.
One more quick question. As I've followed you, you've done a terrific job during the coaching search, and then, of course, Lane coming over. The one thing that I have noticed is I have got the sense that you really believe that long-term Lane Kiffin is going to win at LSU. I tend to agree with you. What leads you to believe that?
Because I watched Nick Saban, Les Miles, and Ed Ogeron win championships at LSU.
Yeah.
How did Ed Ogeron work at Ole Miss?
Yeah.
Bro, I mean, LSU, it's why Lane left Ole Miss. Like, I believe two things are true at the same time. I believe all the things he says about Ole Miss, him needing Ole Miss at the right time in his life. He found sobriety at Ole Miss, his family there in Oxford. Like, all of those things can be true. And he can also want a challenge and an opportunity that LSU provides. I mean, we all know why the advantages LSU has, right? There are things, if you just want to talk about the population of the state, the size of the city, the university, the talent in the state, the only Power Five, like all the things that we know. It's Ed Ogeron built the greatest college football team ever. Ed Ogeron. Lane knows he's got a greater chance to win. It's why he left. And I do think he will win there because everybody wins there.
Well, one more quick follow-up. Is there a worry in the back of the minds of LSU fans that at some point, I don't know, if he doesn't win a national championship or if he wins 3,
that when he leaves, he's going to burn it to the ground like sure. he's done at other places.
Sure.
Is that in the minds of some fans?
I wouldn't even call it a worry. I think it's just you don't you don't consider the end at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, you enjoy the journey. And the point is, if you go through this process with Lane, now I personally think he will leave LSU for the NFL. That's what I think is going to happen.
That'd be a
pretty
good guess,
I think it'll be, if it's 4, 5, 6, whatever length of time, I don't know. But I believe that's the one itch that he needs to scratch, the place where he failed in Oakland, and college continues to resemble the NFL more. But the thought is, okay, well, if over the course of 5 years, 4, 5, whatever it is, you win a national championship, then you go to the NFL, okay, even if it's a messy ending, it's worth it. Keep going back to Ogeron, the end with Ed was messy. Back-to-back, very bad seasons.
Yeah.
The culture was bad. I mean, you had players during the COVID George Floyd thing marching to the president's office at LSU in opposition to the coach and something. Like, it was an ugly thing at the end. But would you accept all the ugly? And if the trade-off is you get the 2019 season, 100 times out of 100, the answer is yes. So I think that's probably where the collective LSU fan base falls.
Matt Moscona, ESPN 104.5 in Baton Rouge, and New Orleans, and the Locked On LSU podcast here for Media Days.